We're continuing Mishlei. We're up to the 12th chapter, and what they call the 12th chapter. and it's a new semester, so we will reintroduce the book of Proverbs. King Solomon said many, many proverbs. The idea of a proverb is to be able to assist people to conceptualize spiritual concepts by giving them physical examples. So the proverb, the parable, is there to help us understand concepts. Doesn't prove anything, it just helps us connect it to the world we're familiar with. And the proverbs were said in a way that the literal meaning of the verses have a message, and the deeper meaning has a message, and there are multiple levels of interpretations like every part of Tanakh. Now King Solomon said thousands of proverbs. The rabbis spent generations analyzing the different proverbs he said until they concluded which ones should be included in Mishlei. And really it happened in two stages, as the book of Mishlei actually records. There were the proverbs that were included initially, and then there were proverbs that were included at a later date by a later king, Chizkiyo, the men of Chizkiyo, towards the end of the first temple, and that's stated overtly in the verses towards the end of Mishlei. Yes? So throughout Mishlei you have different sections that are introduced with different names. Our tradition is that they are all code names for Shlomo. Just like Koheles is a code name for Shlomo, so too Lemuel is a code name for Shlomo, as well as others. But there are places where Shlomo says, "I am telling you what my father told me," and then he goes on to speak, and then he's quoting his father. In the last chapter of Eishes Chayil, there's a dispute among the commentaries when it says the rebuke that his mother rebuked him. So you have a few verses where it says what his mother rebuked him. So that's obviously not him talking. Some want to say that even the Eishes Chayil wasn't said by Shlomo, it was said by his mother. This is part of the rebuke that his mother gave him. Because the previous chapter concludes with Divrei Lemuel Melech, Hamasa Asho Yisiratu Imo. The words of Lemuel the king, the rebuke that his mother gave him. Our tradition is that Lemuel is another name for King Solomon, and our sages go on to explain why he was given that nickname as Lemuel. You could go see our classes there, we go into it there. But something along those lines. So she gives him... What? I didn't hear you. Okay. Okay, so the book of Proverbs is written on multiple levels. There's the simple reading, there's the deeper interpretation. As the book attests in the very beginning, the book says, I'm going to talk to you in parables, but there's a message in the literal reading of the verses as well. So we will pick up with what's called the 12th chapter, the first pasuk.
The what?
The 12th chapter, the first pasuk. Now, it was voted that I should read it with the Sephardi traditional tune. So I assume you guys still want that, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll continue that. This pasuk is one that conceptually, intellectually, I think we can all understand. Emotionally, I think none of us can connect to. So the pasuk says, what they call the 12th chapter, first pasuk, and Bezalel, please help yourself to some pizza. Good. Ohev musar, ohev da'at, v'sonei tochachat ba'ar. He who loves rebuke loves knowledge, and he who hates rebuke is a fool. He is going to remain in his foolishness. And what Shlomo is doing in this verse is he's hitting us in the heart where it hurts. He's saying, you really want to grow, you have to be willing to hear what you don't want to hear. One of the hardest things to hear is, you're wrong. You have to change. And the Talmud tells us already in the days of Rabbi Akiva, the rabbis testified that they were not on the level that they should have been. The rabbis said about themselves that they were not on the level that they should have been, because ideally a person should love intellect so much that the nicest thing you could do to him is tell him you're wrong. The nicest thing you could do to him is explain to him why he's wrong. Now you'd think that that's obvious, right? No, it isn't. Go tell someone he's wrong. I had the wonderful experience of mentioning to a professor that a doctor understood a medical situation differently. So, he's talking about a human being that's under the care of the professor, a child. He didn't do anything wrong. All I did was say, you know, there's a doctor who thought that the condition is different. So the professor turns around and walks out of the room. I said, excuse me, wait a second, the child needs your treatment. Well, you're not listening to me anyway. Did I not listen to him, or did I suggest that maybe there's a different diagnosis? But no, if I challenged what he said, so now I'm challenging his ego. You're challenging my ego? Goodbye. Walks out of the room. But you know what? We hear it about a doctor. It was stunning to me when it happened. But we're all that way to a degree. That's what the rabbi said. We are all distant from the level we should be on. We should be on the level that King Solomon just described. Ohev musar, ohev dat. I love it when someone tells me I'm wrong, because that's my opportunity to get smarter. But we're not there. And Shlomo warns us, Sone tochachat, he who hates rebuke is ba'ar. He's not going to grow. He's going to remain a fool. Because if I'm limited to myself, so then I can't grow. I'm limited to what I can conceptualize, but there's a lot of wisdom to be gleaned out there. Shlomo isn't saying that every person that tells you you're wrong, you should listen to and say, thank you, that's great to hear. No, he's not saying you should just be a pushover. But if someone's going to prove to you you're wrong, and you don't want to hear it, or he's going to suggest to you you're wrong, and you're not open to hearing it, so then you have very much constricted yourself to yourself. A person can't grow. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech says, if you love rebuke, if you love it when a person comes and tells you you're wrong, because that gives you an opportunity to hear, okay, what else can I learn? So then you're going to be Ohev Dat, one who loves knowledge. But if you're Soneh Tochachat, which is where most of us are most of the time, I hate it when someone proves me wrong, so then Ba'ar, then that person just remains a fool.
Rabbi?
I'm with you.
First of all, I think that entirely true, brilliant. But
I thought you were going to tell me I think you're wrong. keeping with the logic of King Solomon.
What does it mean, though, like, in terms of practicality, to love rebuke? How do you love rebuke? I understand, is there a difference between loving rebuke and accepting rebuke?
Yeah.
So then what does it mean to love rebuke? Because I can understand, if you can accept rebuke, in order to be constructive criticism, in a way, I don't like that term, you understand what I mean. But what does it, is for the purpose of improving, for the purpose of I can accept your rebuke and improve my ways because of what you're telling me. What does it mean to love it? Does it mean to invite it? What does it mean?
I think the question is, in attitude, when someone comes and says, I think you're wrong, is our initial reaction, please tell me, I want to know? Or is our initial reaction to become defensive? Do I love the capacity to grow? Or do I hate it, but I might force myself to it? Shlomo isn't talking about whether you accept it or not. Shlomo's talking about whether you love it or hate it. And the Talmud tells us that in the days of Rabbi Akiva already, the Talmud says, the rabbis testified that they don't think they know anyone that's on a level that they love rebuke. The verse will say, Hochach lechacham v'yaveka. We'll see the verse in Mishlei says, rebuke the intelligent one, the smart one, and he will love you all the more for it. The Talmud says, we don't know if we have someone, the Mishnah, in the days of the Mishnah already, we don't know if we have anyone in our generation who's on that level. That you'll love the person more because he rebuked you. You might be willing to put up with it. You might be willing to think about it. You might say, okay, I guess I have to learn that. But can you really remove your ego from the picture and love him more and really appreciate it? Oh, that's ohev tochachat. That's someone who loves rebuke. We're not there. We're not. There's a person who can say intellectually, okay, I got to hear this. I'm going to grow from it. But he's gritting his teeth as he's getting it because it's hard to hear because his ego is a major part of his personality, which is where most of us are. Then you have a person who intellect governs and truth governs and the quest for truth governs. And then when someone comes and tells him you're wrong, so he says, please tell me. And if you prove him wrong, he's so happy. He says, wow, I owe you so much. That's so great. And he means it. We're not there, but we should be there.
So what about the person who, I would say, is kind of in between, where it's a back and forth discussion until, boom, it clicks in his head, all right, I was proven wrong, I understand your logic, and then he improves his own position.
That's the best we can aspire to these days. That's the best we can reach. And I don't think anyone can reach the level where he loves the guy and says, thank you so much, and he means it. He might say thank you so much, and he might intellectually appreciate it, but his emotions are not there.
What about the guy who doesn't get proven wrong, but pretends that he does, that he was just to get the other guy to stop talking to him?
That has nothing to do with this. It's another question. That's not this. Yeah?
So you couldn't
Oh, I didn't say that. I said that Hochach lechacham veyeh haveka, that if one rebukes a wise person, he will love you more for it. But that we're not on that level. I didn't say rebuke stems from love. That's a totally separate question where it came from. That's a verse in Psalms where King David says, we say it, that's the beginning of the verse. Mereim tishmana oznai. Just before tzadik atama yifrach. I forgot the beginning of the verse. So what's the beginning of the verse? Says Bikrov. Vatabet ani beshuhai. Vakamim alai mereim tishmana oznai. David HaMelech says, when those who hate me come upon me, my ear is listening. Meaning, David loved rebuke so much, he wanted so much to improve who he was, that even though people who hated him came to rebuke him, and you'd think David could easily absolve himself. He could easily say, they just hate me. Of course they're saying I'm bad. No. David said, the people who hate me the most, they're the people who will know exactly where it hurts. They're the people whose rebuke I should listen to first, because they're going to know where to hit me. They're going to know how to say, you know, you did that. Nah. They're going to know exactly where my weak points are. So that's why David was on that level. There's rebuke that stems from love. There's rebuke that doesn't stem from love. That's not what was discussed here. What was discussed is that a wise person loves the person who rebukes him. And that, the Talmud says, that already 2 millennia ago, there was no one on that level. It says it's a high level. Okay, King David was on that level. Other people, but Talmud says they said, nope, we're not. Should be, but we're not. Yeah? Okay. Back to Mishlei. Tov Yafik Ratzon Me Adonai. A person who is good and kind, he brings goodwill from Hashem, from heaven. Ve'ish mezimot Yarshia, and a person who is constantly plotting how to hurt others, he causes antonym of to vindicate, to implicate. He implicates the world. When a person is sinful, he's not only hurting himself, he's really bringing the whole world down. And you could understand the verse on a spiritual level, that every one of us, the world is judged on Rosh Hashanah. So if you noticed in the prayer, what were we discussing about? What was the focus of the prayer of Rosh Hashanah? Okay. And if you looked closely, then you would notice that about 70% of the prayer is not talking about the Jewish people. 70% of the prayer is talking about humanity and the world at large. Because our tradition is that on Rosh Hashanah, the world at large is being judged. And so our concerns are not focused on the Jewish people. Yes, you have that 30% that talks about us. But if you look at the prayer, we say, let the whole world connect to monotheism. Let the whole world understand that you're running the world. We await the time that the Lola follow suit. It has nothing to do with us. The focus is his kingship. And so, if you want to understand this verse on a spiritual level, when a person is kind and good, so he uplifts the whole world, because when the world is judged, we're judged as a whole. There's the judgment of the world, there's the judgment of each country, there's the judgment of each people, of each city, each family, each individual. That's on a spiritual level. On a simple level, you could just understand that we affect one another. But I think the first interpretation is more accurate with regards to the verse. Lo yikon adam b'rehesham v'shosh tzadikim bal yimot. When a person does wickedness, he does not lay a firm foundation for himself. Very often a person thinks that if he is the most vicious, he does cutthroat competition, that's how he will be successful. And no, the Pasuk says, Lo yikon adam. A person is not establishing a good foundation when it is based on wickedness. And the roots of the righteous do not move from the world. Now this is a recurring theme. And last time we learned this theme, we quoted Les Miserables. Right? That's the message of the play. You guys know what I'm talking about? There's a French play about a man who is very powerful, and when he's a young man, he breaks into his family's dying of hunger, and he's like 18 years old. And he breaks into a store and gets some bread for his family because they're dying of hunger. And then he's jailed, and he spends years in jail. And there's one officer who's in charge of him in jail, knows his number by heart. And he's unusually kind wherever he goes. And he's also unusually powerful. And he's very smart. And then there's one time an opportunity to escape the jail, and he jumps a huge ravine down into the water, and they shoot after him, and he manages to escape. And he forms a new identity, and he becomes a mayor of a town. He actually works his way up in society. And this policeman makes it his vendetta, his job, to catch him. And he memorizes his number, and he starts chasing him down. And finally he discovers that the mayor... one time a wagon breaks down in the middle of the square and a man is pinned down under the wagon, and the mayor is riding by and he jumps off his chariot and bends under the wagon and physically does what no one else could do, lifts the wagon to save the guy's life. And this is the type of person he was. Everywhere he went, he did kindness. And one of his workers was on the verge of dying, and she told him how she has a daughter in another town and he has to save her because she's deathly ill, and he goes and saves the daughter and risks his own life to save the daughter. And wherever he goes, he's doing kindness. And this policeman says, when he sees the mayor jump off the chariot and do such a Herculean feat, he says, no, I only saw one person in my life who has such power. And then he puts two and two together, and he starts researching the mayor, and he comes to the conclusion that he's that ex-convict, that fugitive. And he comes and he wants to arrest him, and he runs away and he continues living his life as a fugitive. But first he goes to keep his promise to that worker to save her daughter. He uses his savings, and he lives the rest of his life under the chase. And the book shows how every time he's almost caught by the policeman, a favor that he did back in the day comes back to save him. So that's the recurring theme. He is a kind man throughout his life, and the kindness that he does always comes back to repay him. Everywhere he goes, he suddenly needs to find a place to hide, and there's someone who he saved his life or helped him on a different occasion. So that's the recurring theme of the book. You do kindness. At the end of the day, you lay the foundations for your continuum. The end of the book is the... It's a book like this thick. The end of the book is, in the French Revolution, I have a history too. What? Where Les Misérables. So at the end of the book, he's standing with the policeman, and the policeman is caught by the rebels of the French Revolution, and they give him over to this man who he spent his whole life running away from. They tell him, you could kill him, and he lets the policeman go. He says, I have no interest in killing you. And suddenly the policeman is faced with this terrible realization. I spent my whole life chasing a guy because I was sure he's a terrible person. He could have killed me. I tried killing him so many times and he didn't. And then the policeman commits suicide. That's his end. But the story really revolves, there are a few themes to the story. One of the themes is this idea that you lay a foundation of good, then you're laying a foundation that has continuum. A foundation of wickedness is not a foundation. Lo yikon adam beresha. Very often, we're very tempted. You think, I'll just cheat this person, I'll just cut this corner, and that's how I will succeed. And the recurring theme of the book of Mishlei is, no, do not be tempted by that. The wicked ways will not lay a foundation in the long run. In the long run, it does not last. The shorsh tzadikim, but the root of the righteous, bal yimot. That's eternal. It doesn't move. Pasuk Dalit. Eshet chayil ateret ma'ala. The woman who is a kosher woman. The woman who is the way she should be. An eshet chayil. A woman who is exemplary is ateret ba'ala. She is the crowning of her husband. He takes pride in her achievements. Uchrakav be'atzmotav mivisha, and a woman who is shameful to her husband, a woman who is, I guess, the antithesis of the ideal woman, she is like rot within a person's bones. So it eats him from inside out. So when a man has a wife whose actions bring shame to the home, so it destroys him from inside out. Right. Lo aleinu lo aleichem. Right.
Could you remind me again what
the Eshet Chayil is? The crown of her husband. He can take pride in her as a woman of valor. And the one who is the antithesis of that, she does things that bring shame, so... There, her husband is eaten from inside out. It's like having a worm eating him from inside out, causing him to rot, like wood rots from inside out. On the outside, you see him, he smiles, everything's beautiful, everything's perfect. On the inside, he's eating his guts out. So, tomorrow we're on?
Yeah,
with Ragalach?
Two.
Shka. Pasuk, hey. Machshevot tzadikim mishpat, tachbulot reshaim mirma. The thoughts of the righteous is how to bring justice to the world, to save people from unjust treatment. A person who is just is not only interested in his own welfare, he's interested in helping a just world evolve. One of the great themes that you will see time and again throughout the Tanakh is that our job is to better the world, to make this world a better place. The thoughts of the righteous is how to ensure that there's more justice in the world. Tachbulot reshaim, whereas the thoughts of the wicked are mirma. How can I find a new way to swindle? And a person has to ask himself, where are my thoughts? You want to know who you are? Ask yourself, what do I spend my free time thinking about? Where are my thoughts when I have free time? What a shameful question. Okay. Okay, the person has to ask himself. And if what?
Question is, when do you have free time?
I agree with what Zion said. We all know there are times, even in an exciting class like this one, where one's mind wanders. Zion, you weren't supposed to laugh. And when one's mind wanders, you have to ask yourself, where's my mind wandering? And I think here we should remember Maimonides' advice. She'en hayetzer tokef ela et alev hapanui min hachokma. Where does our face, our crass desire attack us? When our mind is clean of wisdom. Meaning, when your mind is focused on things that are positive, when you're involved in things that are positive, when your focus is to grow in things that are positive. It could be a charity organization, it could be doing kindness with your neighbor, it could be learning Torah. What's the mind busy with? One of the great evils of our generation is that we have free time and we misappropriate it. And that's why people end up meeting psychologists, because they're so busy with what did he do to me? What did he say to me? Does he like me? Was it fair what he did to me? Is life fair to me? Do I like what I see? Don't I like? Our free time revolves around ourselves instead of revolving around what we could and should accomplish. Guys asked me a year or two ago, what do I think about watching TV? So I got very upset by the question. There are orphans in this neighborhood. There are children who were abused in this neighborhood. Within 2 minutes walk of here, you have illiterate children who need someone to teach them how to read. You have free time? I'm not saying you have to learn Torah every minute. I understand the person sometimes needs a break. I don't understand the person wasting his time in front of the TV. There are so many people that need help. How could a person justify that? You need a break? Take a break. Go for a walk. Go for a hike. Go play ball. TV isn't a break. We all know that. TV is just wasting your time. You want to take a break? Take a break. I'm all for it. But you're going to waste time? I don't get it. There's so much that needs to be done. Within 2 minutes walk of here, you have illiterate children. Illiterate. No one's teaching them how to read. Okay, 5 minute walk. You know that 5 minutes from here, there's an old age home with old people that have no one to talk to them. You have nothing to do with your time. You want a break? Go, I'll give you the address. They're interested in having someone to talk to. What?
Let's say that yeshiva word doesn't focus on that person that has money. You know, doing whatever. And I've been in yeshiva that they stress that point. Especially in the yeshiva too. And you know, sometimes I ask about that. Why don't send guys to activities with all kinds of people?
We've been doing that. We've been trying to do that. Guys who are on top of things on time, we try to set them up with volunteering before the bin is on. We've had guys...
many times volunteer is about land. Land is very good, but in order to have land, we need to have people, and we need to have people, so we need to have people.
So we don't cover everything, right? We don't cover everything. We do what we get. Okay, back to Mishlei. So what did we see so far? We're going to end here, even though we usually try to cover 10 psukim, but we covered 5. But what did we discuss? We said that he who loves intelligence is very interested in hearing when he's wrong. We said we're not on that level. We said that doing good affects the whole world. It's not only about the person himself. We said that evil, even though it seems like that's the quickest route for building oneself, in essence, that's not a true foundation. True foundation stems from righteousness and kindness. We said that a woman of valor is the crowning of her husband, whereas a woman that brings shame is rotting from within. And we said the thoughts of the righteous are all about justice, and the thoughts of the wicked are all about deceit. And a person can gauge himself based on where does his mind wander when he has free time. And I'm not saying that's the complete gauge of a person. We all have desires we shouldn't have, and we all have wanderings of our thoughts that we shouldn't have. But a person should nonetheless be focused on the positive so that when his thoughts wander, they are busy with things that are positive. And that's the pasuk, machshevot tzadikim, the thoughts of the righteous are mishpat, how to bring what's fair and right and just to the world.